Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order, and Senator Kelly, Senator Stimson, Senator Sturgalowski are on hand. I'll apologize in that we've had a little bit of problem in getting some drafting done. I think everybody has their individual bills up there, so we don't have committee substitutes. I'd like to take a look at all of the local government package today. I think we have a few people here to testify, and if there is time at the latter part of the session, we will do a little bit of work on that, and I'll give some suggested copies of draft language. We'll also be considering the waste disposal bill that we had before us on Tuesday. We have some other addition information, and also a committee substitute for Senate Bill 131. This is a bill we heard last year, and I can would plan to bring that forward with the information on the bond issue. I'd like first to do Senate Bill 436. We have Commissioner Mueller here. This was the bill that asked for, is proposing to add solid waste processing or disposal facilities. If this bill is passed, it adds approximately $10 million to the bond package. And when we had the hearing on Tuesday, we requested the department to come back with looking into the question raised by Municipal League. They wanted to see increased participation by the state, but more in the area of those projects where there is not any federal funding. The department had some problems with that. There was going to be a meeting and additional information given to us. So I think at this time we'd like to hear from the commissioner as to what information you've developed, or whoever's appropriate. This would be Senate Bill 436.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. With me is Keith Kelp, the chief of our facilities construction and operations section that handles these particular types of projects. We met with a number of people discussing some language. In the enclosed position paper, we have developed some language that I think will take care of a series of problems. Because when we start changing the percentage of contribution by the state, it kind of ends up with a domino effect. Mm-hmm. And it also affects federal participation. There are special kinds of projects that, for example, that the state pays 100% for, the Department of Military Affairs and our department share the cost of a project, like, for example, NOM. There are other similar kinds of projects. And we don't want to preclude those eventualities. And I think what we've tried to do is simply say that recommend here in the language in the next to the last page before the fiscal note that we would insert a change into SB 436. Say how increase the eligible cost percentage to 75% for all projects, and put a caveat in there that for no project for which there is federal participation shall the state's grant exceed an amount which will result in a total of state and federal grant funding exceeding 87.5%. That would be our recommendation. I think it's based on our conversation on the Tuesday, in which we're concerned that there be a sufficient local share in these types of projects. We think that this particular language should solve a couple of problems that I would like to have put on the record, so that if this bill does pass, it's clear that it will not have any effect on, for example, projects in which the federal government participates because the federal government has an installation nearby that is affected by a regional sewage treatment plant, for example. This is the case in Sitka, and it's the case in Fairbanks, and hopefully in King Salmon, a few other communities in which, as a result of the impact of the federal government, usually a military installation, but in the case of Sitka, the hospital and the school, on the federal government shares in that process over and above any grant funding that might be provided by EPA. I think we might make it clear that if you add those monies up, we might end up with a percentage that's indeed higher than 87.5%. However, that is not grant funding.
Mm-hmm, okay.
I think that it's clear at this juncture that is not a grant. It is a contract between the federal government and the city, in which the federal government is paying their fair share of a project. Just as I would, if I were a property owner and a property assessment was worth my fair share of the project.
Commissioner, just so we're crystal clear on that, that could mean then that as far as the community itself goes, it could be above, it could be 100% or
right.
Whatever.
In that kind of a situation.
Okay.
We want to make clear that those sorts right. of situations will still be allowed. But for the ordinary types of projects, where the federal government does not have an installation, we would like to recommend that there still be a 12.5% local government share for those projects. That's our recommendation. I don't think that the administration will have any particular problem with increasing the share of the types of facilities that we're talking about on Tuesday, such as sewerage collection facilities, public water supplies, that are not federal.
All right. So we've addressed the problem that was brought to us, our attention, by Municipal League, but except for those extraordinary conditions where there's a federal facility that creates a special need for impact funds, our limit is now 87.5% versus what before was a limit of 82.5%. Is that correct in some cases?
It'd be the same limit that exists today in EPA-funded facilities.
Okay, I understand that. Right. But in those projects where there is not...
There's no federal funding. The state would fund 75% of those projects. Previously, we funded 50%.
All right.
I'd say if there was 60% federal fund, then we would pay the difference between 60% and, well, what half the difference, whatever, I guess that'd be 30%. Yeah, so we paid 27.5%, where previously we paid 20%. But the sliding scale is a little hard to describe, but...
Well, what are we talking about? Did you do an analysis of the proposed bond issue to get some kind of a feeling? We have no idea how many projects fit in the one category versus the ones that have just the state, local, as opposed to the EPA-funded ones.
We did a rough approximation, and I guess our analysis indicates that change would generate a need for an additional $6 to $8 million.
And you feel that the administration could speak in support of that if it was the desire of the committee?
Yeah, when I spoke to the governor about it, and that was last week, before we got involved in this compromise, so to speak, we just wanted to reinforce the governor's feeling that in any type of capital improvement project, in general sense, that municipalities did have major share in that, and we felt that 12.5% historical figure has been sufficient to indicate their interest. For projects of less, where the state and federal share is less than that, I do support the state.
I think that'll be a matter then for the committee. We also had, that had not accompanied the bill, but has been made available to us by Jim Baldwin, the Legislative Counsel, and you should have a copy of this in your folder regarding these grants for solid waste disposal and processing. A couple of definitional problems dealing with solid waste facilities and processing. Have you had an opportunity to look at that memorandum and you have a comment?
Yes, I have. And I don't think that there are two points in the memorandum. I don't think the number one is really too much of a problem in terms of a conflict. And clearly, the separate section that refers to solid waste in SB 436, the definition applies. I don't think that's too much of a problem. He's recommending that we also, essentially, I think, recommends that there be a definition of solid waste included And I brought one along. HB 353 that was introduced in the legislature last year has a definition of solid waste in it, which is compatible with the federal definition that currently have in our regulations. And if the committee would feel it would be desirable to include a definition of solid waste, I think it would be helpful to us as well. I would recommend this definition in HB 53, and I give you a copy. It's a rather long definition, but I think we wanted to make sure it included everything that could possibly be construed as solid waste.
Mm-hmm. You want to take a look at that and see? A couple of questions we might throw out on 436. Do you know how many municipalities have applied and how many have accepted responsibilities for solid waste disposal? Are we talking about a good number of areas of the boroughs that actually have that power?
Yeah, we have to check with Community and Regional Affairs mm-hmm. and our permit program to determine exactly how many municipalities have that power.
Okay.
Most of the large municipalities do have solid waste power. The only major one that does not, to my knowledge, is Juneau. Mm-hmm. Anchorage, Fairbanks, Ketchum, Hempstead, Kenai, Matsuboro, Valdez, Cordova, Nome, all of those municipalities have municipal solid waste disposal program.
It was my understanding at one time you were developing a solid waste kind of disposal plan for the state. What's the status of that, and what does that offer to the areas of both? Well, it would be the organized governments we're talking about right now.
Well, currently that plan is still under development. We're
actively.
Yeah, and we're incorporating in it an inventory of hazardous waste sites because mm-hmm. of the emphasis on hazardous waste disposal problems in both the nation and Alaska. That will probably slow it up a little bit. I'm not sure what the details are, the timing for that, but we can get you that information.
I would like to set up a meeting, and not now, when there is more time, where we can sit down and talk. We saw some problems in rural Alaska in coordination. I'd like to sit down, maybe in a work session, to find out how you look at other planning efforts that are going on in communities, how you address the question of energy. To me, it's absolutely criminal when we create something that's got heat loops in it and we can't afford the energy for it. And I think there's some value of what we learned out there that we might talk about if we could arrange a time.
We'd like
time.
Very much to do that.
Yeah, because I don't know that it would mean any legislation, but I think it's important to, I think we're failing in some areas to deliver something that can be used out there.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true, I think, with maybe the Village Safe Water Program, too.
Yeah, we're prevented by the statute from that bond bill from using PSW money for solid waste disposal.
Yes, uh-huh. Okay. And that's something that maybe needs discussion. Jenny Chitwood from Municipal League would like to speak on this, but do you have questions of the commissioner about the issues that are raised? And I'll certainly look to your guidance on whether we will want to clarify this on the state local projects to increase that share so it's more comparable to when the federal government is involved and participates in it. It's got another, $6 to $8 million you're talking about adding to that bond issue. We would need, concurrent wording here. So I'd certainly leave that up and maybe we'll have some other testimony. I think on the, that's probably it. Anything else you'd like to offer?
No, thank you very much. I'm going to have to leave. I'm going to be Keith.
Okay. If Keith can stay, and I think we've perhaps got the basic information we need. Jenny, did you want to speak to your review and the position of Municipal League? And I see Dave Walsh is here, chairman of the Municipal League. Dave, I didn't know you'd respond to the fact I couldn't get back to you in a phone call by coming down here. That was nice of you.
I just wanted to call and tell you that I wasn't.
Okay. Go ahead, whoever.
I really don't have too much to add to the piece of paper that I passed around, except that it should be Senate Bill 436 and Committee Substitute Senate Bill 131. Basically, we're asking for consideration of increasing the state share on non-EPA funded projects to 75%. And
you do have a letter.
I like the wording that DEC came up with.
Right.
For three basic reasons: one, an equity one, a relief for property owners and taxpayers, and one, to hold down the price of land. one of the comments in the DEC paper that was included in the material distributed to you was that small rural communities have problems participating in this program because they can't raise the 50% match. This would be a benefit not only to the residents of organized of the larger communities, but also the smaller communities.
Anything additional?
I would only add, I think Jenny's written testimony sums up pretty accurately the position of the league. We worked last night to come up with our alternative wording, and I think we would like a little time to work through a few formulas under the proposed DEC wording to make certain that it works for both the rural communities and the more populated communities. But on first blush, it looks to be exactly what the doctor ordered.
Senator
Kelly? Well, you know, I like this paragraph in here about relief for property owners and taxpayers, because it's very dear to our hearts, particularly in those areas of the state where we're paying local taxes. But it's been my experience that whatever we do down here, be it increased revenue sharing or whatever the legislature does, that the assessments and the real taxes that the people pay back home continue to rise each year. Whatever games are played with the mill rate, you know, or the assessment rate, one of the two is going up, and they're fundamentally paying more taxes each year than they did the year before. So I'd sure like to know exactly how this is going to relieve any taxes that my people pay, because I'll tell you what I think is going to happen. We might give them a couple $1 million here, but that just relieves another couple $1 million somewhere else that will go into an expanded local government somewhere else. And I don't see how this is really going to result in any local tax cuts.
The way construction projects work for sewer projects and water projects is the total cost is estimated from engineering studies. The federal share, if there is any, is deducted. The state share, if there is any, is deducted. The local share then is divided up among the benefiting property owners. And it, rather than appearing as a mill levy, or rather than affecting the property assessment, and this is where it's confusing because you're talking about a property assessment and also assessing a fee. The local share is divided up among the benefited property, usually on a square footage basis. A local improvement district is created, and the property pays an assessment, a local improvement district assessment, and that's usually related to the local share of the cost of the program. That money never goes into the general fund of the municipality. That money goes directly to the water or sewer project to reduce the cost of whatever state money goes to reduce the local share. The local share then is divided up among the benefited property. It's a slightly different procedure than money going into the general fund that's then appropriated by the assembly or the council for operating expenses.
It might speak to the issue, I think, that's been very much before the assembly recently on Girdwood, if the obviously there, that there had been more state or federal participation, there would have been less of a total cost. But that was an EPA project. So this, I don't believe necessarily these dollars would have affected it, except in, they would have been the collection system, is that correct? Not in the main interceptors and the sewage disposal plant. So it would have been confined to that directly delivered to the people and would make your problem just a little bit easier, I think, in setting the general amount that has to be paid for that.
Madam Chairman, if I could respond to a couple of things the Senator Kelly said. There are, I think, four distinct issues in the context. The first one is the amount of assessment. That really has, I'm sure we're all aware, only a minimal amount to do with local taxes, because by law the assessments are at 100%. And 100% of value. This year, I think we have a problem in Anchorage because I don't think that the property values have gone up as much as the assessments have gone up. I know 3 years ago, when Arliss was on the assembly also, when people would call and scream about their assessments, my response would be, okay, I've never seen your house, and I don't know what it's assessed at, but I'll buy it at the assessed valuation right now. It's long silence. I say, well, no, I can really sell it. And this year, that's not the case. I know our house is assessment came about 10 days ago. And it's, the assessment is more than what I could sell it at because we considered putting it on the market, and I think I know what I could have gotten for it if it's your second assessment. The second thing are the mill rates, and that's a very, very appropriate question. We seem to do things down here that and there's no appreciable effect at the other end. Well, first of all, with revenue sharing, most of the revenue sharing proposals were set in 1971. And since then, there's been no increase in the amount of revenue sharing. In fact, right now we're at 64%. 80% of what it was a couple of years ago, and what it was a couple of years ago was 80% of what it was before. If we were to take the inflation factor that all levels of government are being faced with and plug that into the 71 figures, revenue sharing ought to be about $100 million as opposed to the proposals which float between 19 and 26. Because we're using $1971 to pay for 1980 services. And I think probably the most accurate way to say it is that the relief that has come from state government, one, hasn't kept up with the pace of inflation with the local government. And secondly, the effect of that is mill rates have not gone down. Well, the mill rates have gone down, but the amount of tax has not gone down. But it hasn't gone up as much as it would have gone up if the state assistance were there.
Well,
it'd go right off.
Let me break in a minute here. I think that's probably only true up to a point, because at some point, you know, you just simply can't charge more than 15 or 16 or 17 mills before the taxpayers in Anchorage are going to go, that's it, boy, no more. And literally have a taxpayer's revolt on your hands. So, you know, I think there's only a certain point where, you know, you would use additional funds that the state wouldn't be giving you until all of a sudden you hit the screaming point. So, in other words, what I'm saying is that if you didn't get all the money from the state, you wouldn't have the large services and the large obligations that you have now. They simply wouldn't occur.
You know, that's right. There's no question that we could not have some of the programs that we have now, and whether they're the social-oriented programs like Aid for the Arts or Recreation, or whether they're the more basic things like police protection, etc. For example, we could not provide local police protection if the municipality had to cover 100% of the cost through local tax dollars. It's just not going to beat it. And with the amount per head we're getting from these services, it's still, that's the, next to schools, that's the major item in the mill rate spread. And so you're absolutely right.
Well, let me interject again, Dave. I was back home last week, and it's all good. Politicians are, every once in a while you like to get back home, not too often though, because it's kind of depressing. They're enraged out in Eagle River, absolutely enraged because of their assessments from this year to last year. And you hit them with the increased assessments, which means more taxes, of course. And you also hit them with a fantastically increased utility bill, you know. And they are reaching, you know, that veritable state of revolt we're talking about. And so when I see things like relief for property owners and taxpayers, well, I'm all in favor of that, right? Because that's what my folks need. But I don't know, you know, how this is going to, you know, is it going to result in a tax break back there somehow? And if so, how many mills? I mean,
for example, revenue sharing, which we desperately need. If it's funded at 100%, and those of you on that side of the table here can go to Tudor Road and say to those of us on that side of the table there, we're providing you with $26 million. That's a half a mill. That's all Anchorage's share is. $26 million is a lot more than I make in a week. But when you take the $26 million divided by Anchorage's share and then divide that among the property taxes, it's half a mill, which is really a drop in the bucket. And
you know, just a kind of a comment along what Dave is saying, part of the catch-22, and that I always have trouble knowing which hat I wear, but it speaks directly to your problem. Through the of the legislature, a lot of projects have come into Anchorage that have carried with them operational costs, such as additions to the greenbelt and parks and good roads and so on and so on, while the amount in direct revenue sharing that should be granting some property relief, we have consistently funded at, now he says it's down to 60%, it's been less than, with no increases, so it's almost been a catch-22. I think we should be a little more careful about the dollars we get, realizing there is an impact. We're just forcing them to add operational dollars, plus whatever the local community is saying, and then not addressing the question of revenue sharing. So I think there's a problem. Is that true?
That's right. And with regard to the this bill, I think it provides a pretty good example. If this bill doesn't pass, the current formula proceeds, the bill in Eagle River is going to be more, and that's all there is to it. If it does, the bill in Eagle River may not go down, but it isn't going to go up as fast. The second thing is that this is not municipal, this is pure parochial anchorage. I would think that perhaps some consideration should be given to making this formula retroactive to do exactly what you're talking about, Tim. Because the people in Eagle River and in Anchorage, and I'm not saying this is not true in other parts of the state, I'm just not familiar with other parts of the state, have put in facilities already because they have planned ahead. Without some kind of consideration for retroactivity on this, you're penalizing those who said, you know, this is something the community needs, and if we have to bite the bullet and the local taxes, we will. And rewarding those who say, forget it, let's let it go until the state comes in and fix it up. And that's another problem that I think the people in the river in particular are faced with, because, as you know, that area of the community is just exploding in population. And in order to be responsible, there have been some planning, some pre-planning done. The sewage treatment facility, for example, is the best one. If that hadn't been built, if we had laid in the weeds and said eventually it's going to get so bad that we'll get some relief, then we probably would have gotten the relief. Your tax bill in Eagle River would not be what it is, and eventually the state or perhaps even the feds would have come in and picked up a lot more. But because there was a responsible attitude, we may wind up suffering.
What's the pleasure of the committee now? We'll come back with the bill. We have the issue of that I had thought I had a fairly good understanding that you did want to see the legislation that would add the waste disposal facilities, and that had the 60% in if they had the resource recovery, and then the attendant changes that are necessary in the bond bill for that amount. I don't have a good feeling from you whether you would like to see that 6 to 8 million increasing, as Municipal League is suggesting, those projects that are strictly state, local collector systems as opposed to the ones that the federal government shares in.
Well, frankly, Madam Chair, I'm not at all convinced that we should go to bond issues at all this year. That's a different question entirely, mm-hmm. and I'm still thinking that one mm-hmm. over. If we are going to pass this bond issue out, I would suggest that we do adopt the municipality's 75% amendment. And hopefully, next year I won't be under the same pressure back home as under this year. No doubt I will.
Senator Stimson?
Yes.
If there's general feeling, I will bring you back in specific bills so you're not just waving your hands then, as soon as we can get the unclogged, or the pipe unclogged, or whatever it's called up there. I didn't mean to cut out. Was there anyone else to speak on that particular issue? I don't recognize anyone in the audience. Yes.
One point I'd like to bring up.
Yes, Keith.
I would, in your deliberation, I'd like to strongly consider not going retroactively within the 75% funding, but administratively to go back and revise all the 200 odd grants that we've got to change that percentage of contribution for projects that are already maybe up to 90% complete. Would just be a complete headache. If you do go to 75% funding, I would prefer that you leave it an effective date of July 1st as it's written.
I'm not going to. That's the way it is written. If there's other changes, those could be brought back, but I wouldn't recommend at this time doing it. Okay, fine. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Ginny, particularly for your work since our last meeting. It's very helpful. We had set in our teleconference both times indicated that we would keep the public record open on the local government bills, and we have them before you. I do have some suggested changes under consideration, but would like to give anyone an opportunity to talk on any specific concerns. I've had a meeting, and I know that they've also had communication with Chairman Parker by Carl Jack and Harold Napoleon, and we've answered a lot of questions and in some issues of concern. I'd be very happy if they'd like to make any comments to the rest of the committee. It's certainly up to them. We're certainly receptive to any comments they might like to make, or however. Carl, do you care to make any kind of a okay? Dave, you had indicated that you apparently did. Was there something about your testimony that you had wanted me to get back to you on?
Oh no, I just wanted to discuss with you, Madam Chairman, if there was anything else the league could do to assist you and the rest of the committee.
Oh well,
you and I had talked some time ago about the necessity for league support, and we certainly wish to provide all the help that we can. And that was
good. Appreciate that. Yes. John Post. Yes. And you're here from the Department of Labor, Chief of Research, and you had some concerns about census lines. Is that correct?
That is right.
Excuse me just a moment. Do we have in our packet of information that a written communication on that?
No.
On the census line? Okay.
There was a written piece of communication dated the 4th of February, and if you don't have copies of it, maybe I could point out some of the highlights. My comments relate to a fairly narrow area, and that is the impact of Senate Bill 348 on the collection of information for the state. As mentioned, I'm the Chief of Research for the Alaska Department of Labor. I'm sure some of you are acquainted with the information that we collect and analyze and disseminate. It includes such information as the employment, unemployment information, occupational information, demographic characteristics, population characteristics. And our building block for the last 10 years has been the 29 census divisions of Alaska. As you also probably recall, Alaska is unique because we don't have county boundaries. Basically, the census division boundaries act as county boundaries. About 3 to 4 years before the 1980 census, there was a committee of state agencies chaired by Commissioner Lee McInerney of Community and Regional Affairs that worked on establishing the census boundaries for the 1980 census. This was especially since the Native land claims, the Native regional corporation boundaries were one of the key factors. And through a long series of meetings, 24 major areas and 23 sub-areas were defined. This would give us some continuity with the 29 census divisions and cause really a major voting system to be undertaken, which we currently are doing right now. The areas and sub-areas are defined on a map, which copies would be available. A coding change like this is really a monumental effort. The data collected and disseminated by our organization is used by virtually all of the other state agencies and by most of the local units of government. To talk about numbers, just from the unemployment insurance files, there would be about quoting of 10,000 employer files, 50,000 unemployment insurance claimant files, and upwards of 60,000 job claimant files. The concern that we have is that this bill, number one, does not recognize the census areas and sub-areas as criteria for establishing sub-state regional boundaries. And it does not recognize using the census areas and sub-areas for providing statistical information. We estimated, and I think this is a conservative estimate in the Department of Labor alone, that one major coding change would cost about $120,000. We had two recommendations. I've spoken to this at hearings in the House. I recommended that the census areas in some areas been used as one of the criteria. And secondly, to allow the census areas and sub-area information to be sufficient for reporting requirements. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have on this.
Fine. Might make just a couple of comments, and then I'm sure there'll be questions. It seems to me that when the work was done, and I know there was a great deal of input by the various state agencies on setting the census tracts, it's my understanding from conversations with members of the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and we have representatives here today, that the existing REA boundaries were taken into consideration.
Yes, sir.
All right, so I think that, you know, this speaks pretty graphically to the problem of all the different lines. And I think realistically, we know that the next time there's a census again, there'll be an adjustment made. There is a mechanism in the legislation that we have that allows for agencies that cannot conform, or if it's going to be extraordinarily costly or so on, a process where they can go to the through the review process. Right now it calls for the Legislative Council, but we'll be recommending, I think, that would go to the governor first and then a report to the legislature. With those areas that would have trouble in conforming. So I think that your particular concern could be addressed through that mechanism. We're going to find an extraordinary number of just the same kinds of things where agencies and departments have, for different reasons, established the different lines. And the whole purpose of this will be to start to coordinate those and to cut down the kind of duplication and elimination of, you know. But I don't think that there's anything in the legislation that there is an appeal mechanism so that you're not going to be forced into that costly system without going through the whole review process and up to the governor. So it seems to me that your fear is, or your concern is very valid, but I think the legislation has a mechanism to speak to that. I don't think we're going to turn you loose and tell you to go out and spend $1 million to conform to some boundaries without giving you a way to go and say, here we have a problem, and then that report has to come to the legislature in order to appropriate the dollars to make those changes. I mean, it just seems to me that the concern is there, but that there is a response to it.
Yes, personally, I advocate from a planning standpoint uniform sub-state areas. It makes total sense. I also think that if you're going to operate programs on those boundaries, the key information that you use for operating those programs should be on the same boundaries. So when I read the bill the first time, I didn't see any recognition of the 19 or the census areas and sub-area boundaries, and my recommendation would be that mm-hmm. statement to include consideration
yes.
of those areas be included in the legislation as kind of a probably monitor that we don't create a whole new court.
I guess I have a direct question I'd like to ask you. What is so valid about, okay, the existence, the lines are there, the census lines are there. What was the criteria used to establish those? Should we conform boundaries to those because there's some special rightness about those? I guess you have to ask, how did you get them in the first place? If they're logical and they're already in the REAAs, then they become a part of this whole process. And, you know, bringing the element, you know, I don't know the elements that went into drawing those. Are they right necessarily because they exist?
Well, they were the same elements that are mentioned in this legislation, the REAA boundaries, the Native Regional Corporation boundaries. Virtually all state agencies that had interest in boundaries participated in this committee, which was, again, chaired by the commissioner.
Okay, as a practical matter, are those boundaries different than the REAA boundaries that exist?
Yesterday, or the day before, Palmer McCarter of Community and Regional Affairs said Regional Affairs was doing a map overlaying the mm-hmm. census areas and sub-areas over the REAA boundaries mm-hmm. to see what extent the differences were. He felt that there would be some, but they would be fairly minor.
Mm-hmm. Any questions of Mr. Post? Will Senator Stimson?
You made reference to a coding change in the cost being $120,000. What does that amount to? Would that be a change in just one area?
Well, the coding change that I'm talking about would be a larger scale change, similar to the one that we're making between the census divisions that we're using right now and the 1980 areas and sub areas. Of course, a minor coding change would cost less than that.
Senator Timms, we had the same thing in Anchorage in 1970, where we had planning districts, so we're not coterminous with the census, and it was terrible to get in and break apart those to pull out the data you needed. But I think we, again, need to investigate what went into setting those, how much deviance there is, and it may be the kind of a thing that when it comes back in a year with a report or back to the legislature, you're not willing to, it's not of value to change that until such time as you change those census lines at a later date. But I'd appreciate your comments. We did have just one copy of your material sent to the committee, and we did not reproduce it because it was kind of lengthy, so I appreciate the fact that you're here.
Okay,
fine. Are there other questions? Good. I wonder if Community and Region Affairs have, you know when that map will be completed, Marie?
No, I'm sorry, I don't, Madam Chair. Howard just mentioned in staff yesterday with community planning people that he wanted it done, and I can let
fine, you know. Could you let us know then? I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mitch, had you wanted to make any comments?
Yes,
would you?
Fine.
Thank you very much.
Fine, thank you.
Good.
My name is Mitch Crawford, representing the municipality of Anchorage. Madam Chair, the rest of the members of the committee. I only want to speak very briefly on the entire package and indicate the municipality's support for what you're trying to do. In a sense, in the state right now, we have apples, organized boroughs, and oranges, the rest of the state. And we strongly support any effort to explore the possibility of the benefits of making us all apples. Whether that will be the final result, we don't know yet, but we strongly support that effort. And commend you on the product that you brought to us over here.
Yes. Any comments, questions? Okay. Fine, thank you. Anybody else would like to make any comments? Would the committee want to go over some of the changes we have, or would you rather I came back with a committee substitute and we address it then? It's really up to you. Is you want a little work session for the rest of it, or if you want to win? Come back with, you know, we have just a very rough, I can go over some of the ideas we're looking at as a result of the testimony. I would do it that way, or we could set a meeting when I have a draft of a committee substitute.
Why don't
you
bring a draft in first, we'll change it.
All right. I think that's a little bit easier to do. If you had particular concerns as a result of your thinking about it and the testimony, I'd be really happy if we could, you know, maybe throw those out. If you had particular areas of interest, as again, I would be very happy to have those so we could bring them into the discussion. Representative Parker has moved out some of. Answered.
Is it your intention to send the entire package out of committee?
Relatively soon, I would think. Hopefully within about 2 weeks. Anything you'd like to bring up now?
Definitely.
All right. As soon as we can get through the log, then we'll try and get back, and that might be sometime the latter part of next week. Jenny?
Chair, I just had one other comment that, in addition to this, that I don't think has been brought up. I've been looking at that Senate Bill 249 and trying to come up with some answers to the problem that Senator Kelly raised on
All right, this was Senate Bill 349, had to do with the regional
planning
assistance fund.
And I don't know if it had been considered, but one thought was that before a contract could be let that there might be a requirement that there be a petition from the residents in the area requesting that the contract be let, which would show an indication of the residents that they were interested, yes, rather than a private consultant being interested in the contract.
This is one of the things that was brought up by the Representative Parker's committee. Perhaps you brought it there. We have a municipality or a group of municipalities and a nonprofit corporation, and that was the additional wording was suggested, perhaps 10 or 15% of the people residing in an area. I haven't discussed that with Community and Region Affairs about if the department then would contract directly with somebody to prepare the study, in a way would take out of any established corporation, a nonprofit corporation out there. I don't know. How does that idea seem to have any merit?
Well, what you're saying, in fact, is that, say, 15% of the people should show an interest in even the study of a proposed borough before a study is done. I agree, you know. At least at that point, they know somebody's thinking about it, there's a study being done, and if they oppose it, they better get their act together. As it is right now, of course, the commissioner could just commission a study, and it could be all completely done before, outside of the public hearings, of course, before a lot of the folks even know that somebody's contemplating making a borough on it. I think that's an excellent idea.
Well, of course, one of the things we could consider some standards that it would have to be, that, you know, that would be, and we do speak to that, representing the various interests in the area, maybe.
Well, we're talking about, you know, say 15% of the total population of the area have to sign a petition to show the interest before a planning contract can be authorized by the commission.
I don't know, what are you looking for? Oh, no, I have that. I was talking about the bill with the funding bill. That would, the proposal,
oh, the appropriation.
For, right,
okay.
Right. Jenny, did you have anything else on that? I can see, you know, that would indicate that people were, in fact, interested. I wonder if that would be a desirable protection if there are other ways of getting that without going to the trouble of a petition. Are you talking in all terms or as one alternative?
Now, this is a philosophical,
yeah,
matter.
All right.
There's no trouble to get 15% of the people to sign a signature if they're in favor of something. If they're not in favor, of course, then you have a major problem. They might not sign the petition. But, you know, that is the essence of local, mm-hmm, government. And I just, you know, I think it's a further consent form from the folks that are going to be affected that should be enacted.
All right, now, but I'm asking you if you would look at that for all methods. If you had, for instance, a group of municipalities in all cases, that's what I'm trying to get to. Is that what you're saying?
I don't understand the question.
No, if that were added in, that would be used in all cases or as an alternative, that's what I'm trying to get to.
Oh. I would say all cases. 15% is not that difficult.
Of registered voters?
Of registered voters, sure.
Or 15% of votes cast the last day of
election. Registered voters.
Of course, you're going to solve that plaintiff registered voter role with the other bill.
With the 2 years? Senator Stimson, you want to make any comments on that?
Well, it strikes me as making pretty good sense.
I'll have some wording developed when we come back and see how you feel. Could work with on wording, because this has been used in other areas. If you could work with Twyla then to clarify that.
And then I think all of the other concerns that I've had have already been expressed.
Okay. We did have one issue that came up that we did not have a bill for. Twyla, does everybody have a copy of that you just gave me?
Yes, sure.
In your packet, you have a Senate bill with no number on it, and it calls for funding information of $300,000. It's an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. That would fund the strategy planning fund that we're talking about. And I would appreciate, once you find it, to take a look at that. I would like to have that drafted and introduced, I believe that's it, Tim, so that we could consider that and move it on. The way we have it now, we're setting up the structure, but we have no funding for it. And I would like to introduce that as a committee bill. Community and Regional Affairs took a look at the areas that they thought would possibly be coming in and saw over a year or 18 months, approximately 3 or 4. Is that not correct, Marie? Of the management studies coming in. And this would reflect the funding for that. Do you have any objection to introducing that and considering it along with the others?
What's one more?
What's one more? Right, with that concurrence, we'll have that drafted, and that'll be before us for action. Okay. Anything else you'd like to bring up at this time? Everything costs money, Senator Kelly. Notice that. All right. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.